to the Good Muslim Bad Muslim Podcast.
Hey, everybody.
Hope you enjoyed our last episode. And we have something special for you after we did all that fun stuff at DeYoung.
Yeah, what do we have going on, Tess?
We have a special show for people. So let's just jump right into it. So I think we're first going to start with Zara's story.
Okay. My friend Huda and I go way back. And when we decided that we were going to talk about Thanksgiving, I knew this was the episode to interview her.
Hey, long time no see.
How long has it been since we've seen each other?
I don't remember.
Your baby was like
a year.
Not talking still.
Really? It's been that long?
Yeah, well, oof. Definitely before February.
You guys are just so far.
I know.
And it's not actually that far. You used to live in the Bay Area, and I feel like I saw you more often when you lived in Berkeley.
She's one of my closest friends, but I only see her on Thanksgiving.
It's Thanksgiving.
So I wanted to do a piece that's about family.
Okay.
But there's also this connection for me between like the spiritual realm and the family realm. And you and I have this in common, this outlook on spirituality that I feel like it's not paranormal. Mm-hmm. It's just normal.
Definitely. It's just human experience and human perception and human relationship. Yeah, definitely.
But see, you say definitely. I feel like other people would be like, huh?
Huh? Yeah. What are you talking about?
This is the thing when you're like interviewing one of your closest friends who you're like telepathic with. Then you get to these moments where you just both agree, but you know that no one else knows what you're talking about.
I have no idea what's going on here.
One of the reasons why I really wanted to do this piece, and it felt like such a perfect juxtaposition with your story about jinns, is because there's this way, Huda put this so well at one point, diaspora, the experience of being a part of a diaspora, a group of people who are dispersed, just totally decentralized as a result of external forces. You feel like ghosts sometimes.
Yeah, you're definitely disconnected from a sense of place. But I don't know. When I'm also diasporic. My family's from Bangladesh. And I think that for me, my feeling is less ghost and more being able to create my own culture that's taking pieces of both sides.
Huda and I have these ridiculous number of intersections in common. One of them is this experience of diaspora, specifically ghost-like, where you don't really feel at home in any one place. And the only place where we both actually experienced a kind of home was literally the one holiday, Thanksgiving. That's the only time where we both were like, wow, that's the only time that I felt like I was on solid ground. And so I always have this like really difficult time explaining my relationship of her to people. Like if you ask me at a dinner party, I'll just say she's my cousin, even though we have no blood relation other than being Iranian Americans, or just to get across how close we are and our family is, I might say, well, her mom and my mom are best friends, and we're best friends, and our dads are best friends, and our sisters are best friends, and we hope our grandkids will be best friends, which just kind of makes us sound like a cult. Both these distillations of our relationship, cousin, best friend, are actually physically painful to me. My relationship to her and their family is so rare in my world that it triggers this sense of scarcity and like preciousness. I feel so protective of just the label of her in my life. Okay, so our origin story feels like there are these other forces that brought us together. We met in this violent anti-Iranian time, the 1980s, when she and I were both little kids. I was 5, she was 1, still in diapers. When my mom spotted her mom at UCI, University of California, Irvine, there were no other women wearing hijab that I remember seeing. I said, Mom, they look like us. Our moms meet, and I just remember them laughing, and Iranian hospitality is competitive. Her mom wins. They invite us over for tea. Okay, and get this. This is all relevant, I promise. They're drinking tea, and my mom spots a photo on the wall that has a picture of my mom's best friend from Iran in Huda's mom's family photo. It's Huda's father's sister, Afsar. It's also Huda's mom's best friend.
That's wild.
They have the same best friend.
But how do they not know each other then?
So here's what's hilarious. My mom goes, that's my friend. And Hoda's mom goes, that's my sister-in-law and my best friend. And they start talking about how much they both love her, and they start making jokes, and they're laughing. And my mom goes, it's so funny. Asar told me to look for this other woman wearing hijab all on her lonesome at UCI campus whose husband is an architect. Like, yeah, sure, I'll just find this random lady. This poor woman is just walking around here, maybe looking for me. I don't know. And my mom's laughing. And then Hoda's mom goes, that's me.
That's so funny.
Our dads meet that night, and they become best friends. And we have this best friend family. And we live there for like another year. And then my dad gets his first job in Silicon Valley, and life without them is really hard.
Yeah, that first Thanksgiving, that sucked. We were all dreading it. Me, my sisters, and my mom were just like, oh, we're doing this. But we had fun. We came up to your house, I think. My dad was happiest with your family.
One of the things that I love about our podcast, Taz, is that because we're in this similar category of like modern Muslim women, everyone expects that we're going to be the same.
And which is not true.
At all.
Yeah.
And so then there's this other way that like people, I think, sometimes take for granted that just because you say the word immigrant or you say the word diaspora, that that means that you have the same experience. There's always like all these stories about like your experience of leaving home. When you left for college, were you like, I'm free?
Oh, yeah. When I left college, I didn't get to go that far because we didn't have that much money to send me out of state. But I went to USC and I was very insistent that I stay in the dorm on campus. And I really didn't try to come home on weekends. But then I like had to come home on weekends because I didn't have money. And so, like, when I would go home, that meant I would get a trunk full of groceries sent with me when I came back. So that was one of the things I kept in mind. I was like, oh, if I go home, I get groceries.
Hoda and I had this thing in common that actually I didn't even realize we had this also in common until I did this interview with her.
Oh, yeah. I had severe depression as a teenager. I had a calendar where I would mark the days I didn't cry. I was lucky if there was one.
We thought our depression would cease once we left the house. But it just got worse.
The only thing that made it much better was when I moved out for college. I remember my mom dropped me off and I told her, don't call me for the first month. Because some idiot told me like, within the first month, you're going to be sobbing and crying to come home. And I was like, no, I'm not. And so I told my mom, don't call me within the first month. And it made her cry, apparently. She's like, I cried the whole way home. It broke my heart that you said that. And you were like, you were just leaving us. This is our first time with a kid leaving us for college. And you just said that. And I was so sure because I was so unhappy at home. I was like, I know, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to move out. I'm going to be free. I'm going to be happy. I didn't make it to the month. I called my mom and I sat outside the dorm and I call her. And the second I heard her voice, I start sobbing and I'm like, oh, can I come home? Can I please come home? And so then like I like got home and I was home for 3 days and then I felt so much better. And I got like, I was like, oh, it's fine. Like nothing has changed. Like, I don't know. I still have a home to come home to. Also, my parents are driving me crazy. It's only been 3 days.
But it didn't get better when we got home. It got better in a different way. Like she and I never talk about this stuff because the only time we ever see each other is Thanksgiving. And that's when we're happy. And there's so much laughter in the house.
Because our moms had the same sense of humor.
Yeah.
Which is like
fart jokes.
Yeah. On par with a 13-year-old boy. Yeah. Fart jokes, burp jokes.
Yep. Poop jokes.
So many sexual.
Sexual jokes?
Innuendos.
Oh, innuendos. Yep, yep, yep.
That's their favorite.
You're right. You know what's funny though is I try to do that with my mom and she gets very uncomfortable and tries to change the subject. Like I'll make a funny joke about a sexual innuendo and it doesn't work with me. But if your mom does it, my mom's all over it.
This is another thing that we have in common that I think is from our moms too, is like when stuff is really bad, we laugh. Like when we hear like, oh shit, that's so bad. You and I are already smiling.
Yeah. What's wrong with us?
We totally got this from our mom.
Oh no.
Like, when Kavanaugh won.
Oh, yeah.
You're already smiling.
I know. Why? It's not even funny. But all you can do is laugh at the ridiculousness that we've regressed to, I guess.
Because it's so bad.
It's so bad. Yeah.
Do you notice that about me, Taz?
What?
That I laugh when things are really bad?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
I feel like it gets me in trouble sometimes. There is this way that, like, laughter is so important to both of our families, mine and Hoda's.
Yeah.
And it's such a part of our resilience. I also never have to explain it around her. And it was fun interviewing her because then there were all these things that we normally, like, we never talk about because we just kind of take for granted because they just are. And we just want to skip to the part where we eat turkey and we play board games.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I never thought about, because we only saw each other at Thanksgiving, where we're happy, both of us also thought that the other family had the less dysfunctional family.
It's funny how everyone's perception is so skewed.
All we did was yell at each other all the time.
When I became older and I realized this connection, I was like, oh no, I don't want to go home because I don't want them to be mad again. Yes. I don't want them to be sad again.
So Hoda and I always got that when we saw each other, we didn't have to code switch. We're both Iranian Americans, immigrant parents, model minority pressure, respectability politics, oldest sisters, dealing with depression, getting out of it, husbands who aren't Iranian, pragmatic, smart, tall, badass women. We have a lot of things in common, she and I. But we never thought about how much our parents actually were code switching for us until we looked back on Thanksgiving.
Our parents, when they would get together, I realized that they were code switching for us the whole time.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Because they would, like, they would talk to each other and, like, everything would change. Their whole demeanor would change. Slang would change.
Yeah.
They would, like, they stopped translating, and I didn't even realize they'd been translating for me.
And they talk so fast.
So fast.
I'm like, what the flip are you saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, really weird.
And then they would, like, do these jokes at, like, rapid pace.
Yeah.
And my dad would just be crying. Like, he'd just be laughing so hard that he was crying. And I was like, what is he saying? And then your dad would, like, try to translate.
It's never funny.
It's never funny. What's your favorite translation?
Oh, no.
That they attempted.
I can't even.
Do you remember? I don't even remember.
It was always choppy, and they would laugh always in the middle of the translation, and then about 70% through, they'd be like, oh, I can't. I can't. All right.
Yeah, it'd be like, the guy with the never mind. You're not
going to
get it.
It's funny, trust me. And then, or they'll just give up right in the beginning, like, it has cultural reference, you're not going to get it.
Or they would, like, be laughing at us.
Not getting it.
Not getting it. They'd all be, like, cracking up.
And then maybe not want to give them the satisfaction of, what? No, tell me. Like, I was like, all right, I'm just going to stop asking.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody can make my dad laugh like your dad could.
How's he dealing with that?
I don't know.
Your parents don't talk about it?
No, I mean, they just, like, get sad, you know. Mm. Those are for the amours, you know, stuff. It's hard to talk about.
It is so hard. Because even when you talk about it, it's so painful, even if it's a happy memory. It's so unfair. He left, like, before he could experience the good parts. He had all the bad parts. But yeah, once he got diagnosed and he was getting chemo, even though he was getting chemo and he was alone in the hospital room because we're all at work and school, he, like, when we would visit, it was quality conversation every time. It was, like, openness, and he was never grumpy, never in a bad mood. So, like, he was changing for, like, the better as far as, like, relating to us and connecting to us. And it just sucks. It's so unfair.
We lost Hoda's dad to terminal illness a few years ago. And it might sound disrespectful for me to forget exactly what year, but honestly, time just stopped for me. No one in the world could make my dad laugh like Hossein Agha, her dad. I'm a comedian. I listen to these things, and laughter is such a part of our family. And when we were recording this segment right now in this moment, I couldn't get through it. I think that's the most I've cried all year. I don't like to cry. I think that's why I laugh all the time. I don't want to cry. And, like, I remember when I was interviewing her for this piece, we started talking about the loss of her dad. And she was saying, and we were talking about ghosts, and do we believe in ghosts? And what does it mean for her having lost a parent? You know, this idea of ghosts. And she was saying it's one of the things that, you know, helps her get through the grief is thinking about her dad, seeing her sobbing and being like, oh, come on, man, I don't want to look at that. I lost an uncle. And I hate that there's no word for what he was to me.
He was more than a diaspora uncle, a family friend. To me, he was my dad's brother. But I don't feel like I can even say that because my dad had a brother and he lost his brother. And that also had a profound impact on him. Profound. But it was different. When you hear your parents, like, I don't know if you've ever had that experience of doing a double take. Hearing your parents talk to somebody in a way that makes them a person you've never seen or met. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And to know that that person who brought out that much joy in my father is also gone. You know, let alone what he, like, Thanksgiving was with Jose Naga. He built these massive wood fires. Like, he was so daring. Like, and because he was an architect and a contractor and, like, a physics person, like, he was fearless. He was fearless, and he made us fearless, and he told stories that made my dad laugh till he literally peed his pants, and then, you know, we talked, they would argue about whether or not my dad did pee his pants. He was an architect, an artist, he was an avid knitter, he knit us all scarves when it was cold, like, literally around the fire, he would just knit scarves and then give them to us. Our house came to life when he was around. And my dad stopped being a walking ghost laborer of Silicon Valley. He was whole. And I really miss him.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell the story because nobody understands what I mean when I say I can't wait for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And what it means to me. I call Hoda my best friend, but that's really not accurate. She's so much more than that. She's my diaspora cousin. We have these intersections that are so specific to us. And as I'm explaining this to her and why I'm doing this interview with her, I barely need to explain it. She totally gets it. And so for everybody listening out there, these holidays, the holidays, there are so many mixed feelings, you know, when it comes to, like, family, the experience of family. I hope your holidays are filled with love, laughter, joy, and maybe a little room for grief.
And we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'll be sharing my story about a little ghost adventure that we had.
Did you know there was a luxury tax on tampons because it's a luxury item?
Damn the patriarchy.
Yeah, what's so luxurious about periods?
I gotta say, the tampons I've been using lately are pretty luxurious. They are Lola's. I got my first box of Lola tampons when I went to the Call Your Girlfriend live podcast recording because they were handing them out to the audience, and I was hooked. And for the past few years, I've been getting these monthly boxes sent to my house.
That's amazing. What do you love about them?
I love that I can customize my box. You can order either 18 tampons or 12 pads, and you can rearrange the absorbency. And you can also skip months, for instance, when you end up buying a bunch of tampons at Costco and have too many.
I love that they're organic. I don't want toxicity in my vagina. Lola products are 100% organic cotton with no added chemicals, fragrances, synthetics, or dyes. Major brands use a mix of synthetic ingredients in their products, including rayon and polyester. Who needs that?
And the best part of all, for every purchase, they donate feminine care products to homeless shelters across the U.S.
I've never felt so good about bleeding out my periods.
For 40% off all subscriptions, visit mylola.com and enter the code word GOOD when you subscribe. That's G-O-O-D. And we're back. And for my story, we're going to jump right into it. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say, Zara, after the story's done.
All right. I'm excited to hear it.
When you think of contemporary gins, you probably think of the midriff blonde from I Dream of Jeannie, or you think of this.
Mr. Lanza, what will your pleasure be?
Let me take your order, jot it down.
You ain't never had a friend like me.
A blue, gregarious, comical genie that sounds like Robin Williams. Or maybe you think of this song. Are, after all, the westernized version of a djinn, a mythical being that lives in a magic lamp and will grant you three wishes. The reality, though, is much more mystical.
I'm a believer in djinns, but Taz made it sound like djinns and ghosts are different. And so now I'm confused.
Oh, ooh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, they are actually.
Ghosts are like a whole other thing. And so I don't know if I believe in ghosts, but I do believe in djinns.
That was the voice of Zara Bilu. We are about to start a ghost tour, or as my co-host Zara Nurbash has been calling it, a djinn tour. We are four Muslim women who just happened to be in New Orleans together this summer for a weekend. We all wanted two things, beignets, and to take a walking tour through the French Quarter. I asked the fourth member of our crew, Sabiha Basrai, what she believes.
Sabiha, do you believe in ghosts?
I do believe in ghosts.
Do you believe in djinns?
Of course, it's part of our mythology. My understanding of the kind of mythology of people passing away is that their spirits and the places that they inhabited leave the vibrations.
Yeah, I feel strongly about spirits leaving vibrations. Not spirits, but like people. Like I feel like, you know, after my mom died, the sofa that she always sat on, I felt like her energy was there even after she was long gone. And I think that we as humans have energy and we leave behind energy.
That's one of my favorite traditions from how I grew up with my religion and my experience of Islam, was people who I loved, who I lost, I would visit their graves and I would pray at their grave sites and put flower petals on the grave, and then I would take the flower petals with me. And so it was like there was this piece of their energy that I could keep close to me. Or when I was wearing my grandmother's earrings or something like that, there was this comforting feeling that was part of that. So it wasn't a scary experience to think about something of dead loved ones being still present on this earth. It was, for me, a comfort.
Me too.
Yeah, well, okay, isn't Jibreel is a djinn?
That's an angel.
Angel. Oh. Angel.
So he's made of light.
Angels are not djinns.
No.
Not djinns. No, angels are made of light. People are made of dust. Djinns are made of fire.
I want to be made of fire.
Of course you do. Of course you do. I don't even know what to tell you. I'm like, Satan's made of fire. So I was like, I want to be made of fire.
But all of the prayers and incantations that were told to me to make me feel comforted when I was scared were about keeping good angels by my side. It was this feeling that, okay, no matter what life brings, I have this group of angels that has my back that's going to help me get through it. And so if there's djinns and trickster spirits or bad energy or just evil people trying to harm me, I have this support system through my faith, was the way that it was taught to me.
Okay, well, here's why I asked Zara Bilu to expand on her definition.
Ghosts and djinns and goblins and ghouls, like what is all of that? Because in Islam, djinns are an actual type of being created by fire. There is, of course, Satan, which people know Satan's a big bad guy. But we also believe that djinns are beings with free will. So they're not all Satan. Some are bad and some are good, and they're like people in that way. But where do like ghosts fit in? Because ghosts are the spirits of dead people, and then what are ghouls and what are goblins? And when people get dressed up for Halloween, what are they dressing up as? And so what I haven't figured out is where do ghosts fit in, yeah, in the context of Islam? And it's a little bit like need to know. I'm sure there is some scholarly person I could ask, but do I really want to give myself more material for like nightmares or reasons to look over my shoulder? It's like bad enough that I'm worried about white supremacists who I can see. And then if I were worried about ghosts and goblins and all of those things, I don't even know.
Clearly, we are all really on different pages when it comes to ghosts and djinns. I believe in everything, as does Sabiha. Zara Bilu believes in djinns but was unsure about ghosts. Zara Nurbash didn't believe in anything. That is until Sabiha brought up a valid point.
I think we could explain everything with the act of djinns.
What do you mean?
Well, Zara just left her credit card at the restaurant, but I think maybe a djinn took it out of her purse and hid it somewhere.
It's not that she's just forgetful?
No. There was a djinn involved. That's a really much better excuse.
Djinns have been leaving my credit cards at restaurants my whole life.
But you don't believe in djinns, so...
I believe in djinns when I'm unreliable.
All right, we're at the French Quarter. We're in an alleyway, and there's like a combination of tourists and tour guides and unicorn horses with lit up fairy wings and folks just walking around with coffees and these like neon ghost like fizzy frozen drinks that I really want.
I think that's just alcohol.
Yeah, I want that. And it's beautiful. There's brick buildings. There's old shutters. There's like the, you know, the French Quarter, New Orleans, like look, architecture. I do want to know what the orbs are.
Orbs.
Orbs? Okay, the tour guide said we were going to feel the orbs.
The tour guide said when we saw her smoking before we started our tour, there are these orbs that come up when you take pictures. So if you look at old pictures, they don't really come up in digital photos. They come up in, like, regular pictures. So when you go back to your old photos when you're, like, a kid, you'll see little, like, little circles behind heads. Those are either spirits or fairies or whatever.
Or some kind of light that affects the kid.
No, it's not about light. It's about a spirit. You'll see. You'll see.
The last time I had come to New Orleans, I had taken a walking ghost tour. I took a picture of a doorway of this haunted house using my Canon digital camera. I looked at the photo right after I took it. It looked spooky, but nothing out of sorts. It wasn't until a week later that a bright white orb the size of a tennis ball appeared floating in the picture. It hadn't been there before. It was an orb, and I was determined to find one today.
Interesting, though. I think you noticed that a little bit. So when they talk about spirits, if you believe in the ghosts...
We start the tour wandering around the French Quarter of New Orleans. Our tour guide is fine, a petite spunky blonde. She told us stories that were fine. Just fine. A little racist, but just fine.
I'm not like trying to push reincarnation, but...
Zara, look. All the lights are moving in that building.
The lanterns?
The lanterns, yeah, the hanging lanterns. They're all swaying.
You're right. They left the air conditioning on.
No, there's no fan or anything going on. It's closed.
This is New Orleans. They left the air conditioning on, Tess.
No, there's orbs in there.
So orbs that are white, green, or blue are good. If you get a video where they're gray, brown, or red, delete. That's a negative energy.
Delete. Gray, brown, or red.
In the park there, you're going to see them. And you don't have to do it tonight with me. You can do it whenever. And do it wherever. But this city in particular, we've got orbs everywhere. And you can see them in the daylight.
Some cameras?
What was that, Zara?
That's just when you try to take bright, like, pictures at night with an camera.
No, it's real.
Okay.
It is dusk, and we continue to walk through the narrow streets surrounded by French colonial architecture. The sun is setting, and the streets are shiny from the earlier rain. We pass by a building that is under construction, and our guide makes us cross the street.
Yeah, that's why I'm getting off this side of the street, because the spirits, they come out more when, like, you do construction or when, like, you dig underground. Like I mentioned earlier, we built over dead bodies here. It's like Bourbon, they're doing, like, the new sewage lines. I didn't walk down Bourbon. But that freaks me out because you're unearthing somebody's home. So we're going to go on this side of the street.
I'm fine with that.
So we don't get an attachment.
An attachment.
Does that mean they hang out with you for a little while? Do they cuddle?
Forever.
But do they cuddle?
They, like, get on your back? Do they keep me from being alone? Is that what you're asking?
Basically. You can't find it in the living.
Oh, you're going to get married to a tree.
A tree?
Okay, fine. You're going to get married to maybe a djinn. No, you're not. You're not.
No.
I won't push that on you.
I'm just asking so we know what our options are.
Oh, so terrible. So terrible.
Up to 50 sick people were stacked in this room from yellow fever.
Dun, dun, dun.
Because they were single.
Because they didn't have anyone to take care of them.
That's literally what she just said. But I'm here for you, Tess.
Wow. We end up walking around the French Quarter for a little bit longer, not seeing orbs or feeling any energies. That is until we come to this tall, gray, white wall with a dark window inside. The tour guide encouraged us to put our hand in the window, which I refused. But it should be easy for a non-believer of jinns like Zara Nurbash, right?
We've learned on this tour that a cold spot means evil ghosts, but a warm spot means friendly, happy ghosts.
Okay.
So we're going to check the temperature.
I'm just trying to get a little fingers. It couldn't be the breeze. I don't know. But, like, there's kids. They put the kids on the lower level. So sometimes the little kids...
That's even worse. This building is full of the ghosts of children who died of yellow fever.
Nothing works here.
Can we say it again?
Electricity fails. Plumbing fails. Nothing.
I would rescue you. I'd break this fire.
You have to believe.
Warm or cold?
Neutral.
Neutral?
Maybe they're in another part of the building right now.
Maybe you're protected.
Or maybe I have some good angels by my side.
I smell a lot of urine.
It's the bad ghost.
I smell a lot of pee.
Are you going to stick your finger in there?
Stick your finger.
This does not look like a good idea. No, I'm not going to do it.
I thought you didn't believe.
I don't, but I do believe in bad luck.
Inconsistent.
Well, because, you know, I've always been so consistent. Ew, no, something wrong. There's something wrong. There's something, like, there's a feeling that is completely repelling me from putting my hand in there.
You know what that is?
What?
That's the feeling of believing in ghosts.
Just say Fatiha. I don't believe in Fatiha. Remember, I forgot the Fatiha. No, I didn't. Never say that. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Ar-Rahmanirrahim. Maliki yawmiddin. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. When I was a kid, whoever said ولا الضالين the longest won.
It's a game
you play during prayer. I'm not putting my hand in there.
She's a believer.
I'm not a believer. I'm just not putting my hand in there.
Did any of us change our minds on ghosts and jinns after this trip to New Orleans? Not really. Was our tour guide racist and did we leave the tour halfway through? Most definitely. But I still had one more question lingering in my mind, and I needed to follow up with Zara Bilu before I could put the story to rest. So, you once told me that your dad has performed exorcisms in the past.
Yeah, I mean, exorcism is like this strange word in English that means, you know, that like conjures all of these images of like horror movies, and that's not at all what he was doing. The story I was told is that in the early 80s, my dad had his own encounter with someone attempting black magic on our family, and that the process of healing from that then led to him also learning how to help others heal. And so what I remember as a kid is that, like, families would come to us and they'd be like, my kid is possessed, my wife is possessed, like, the house feels like it has spirits in it, help us figure it out. And one of the questions he would always ask people to start that I still remember as an adult is, like, are you praying? Like, are you doing your 5 daily required prayers? And if they said no, he'd be like, well, let's start there, mm-hmm. right? And so that was always his thing, to be like, you can't ask God to protect you if you're not fulfilling your, it's, I mean, you can ask God to protect you, but like you're not even doing your part. And so he would always start there. And then, I don't know, like he'd sit with people and they'd read Quran and they'd pray and eventually they'd get better. But there's something about the, like, we call it exorcism, so it sounds really fancy, but really what it was like intense, at least the way I remember it, was just intense, intense worship sessions. The hard thing about that though is that means that you're doing the, like, quote-unquote exorcism in your free time while you've got a regular job. And yeah. So we always used to worry about, like, what the spiritual impact of it was on him and our family, because it wasn't like you could be in full-time worship to, like, develop the resilience needed to, like, mm-hmm. mess with the jinns, right? Like, you had a day job. So he actually, he did it for as long as I can remember until I was probably, like, 18 or so. And there weren't a lot of people in Southern California who did. So for at least the next decade, I remember, like, we would still get calls and, you know, it's like a house phone back then. And so people would call the house and ask, and we, like, it was like a family effort to be like, okay, no, we're done. Like, that chapter is closed. But yeah, it's weird.
With all the exorcism work Zara Bilu's father was doing at home, surely she must have had one experience.
I remember that my mom would sometimes say that she'd wake up in the middle of the night and she'd feel like the djinn were shaking the bed. And we'd always be like, why? Is it like that's to be fair, I should double check that story with her and she'll probably get mad that I said it on a podcast. But that's like actually something that I remember that they'd be like, this is why you have to pray so much, because if you're messing with them, if you're starting like, oh, it's so bad. You got to bring a knife to a knife fight.
Yeah.
And so if you're messing with the djinns, that I remember. So I remember that. And sometimes if there wasn't like space or availability at the mosque, like he'd have to do the stuff at home. And like that would always like freak my family out. Yeah. Like my grandma didn't live with us, but she'd always be like, what are you guys doing? Like that's way too close for comfort. Yeah. Why are you inviting that in? And it's hard because you're helping people, but there's a cost to it.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, what do you actually believe? So, what do you believe?
That I do need to clear the record.
Oh, all right, yeah. What's the record?
I don't believe in nothing.
Uh-huh. Well, it's clear from this episode that you believe in djinns.
I mean, I don't... That's the thing, is these words have different meanings now. You know what I mean? Like, it just... And the way that it was written, at the time that it was written, like, people were describing things differently. Like, the world was different. So I don't like being bound to this time's definition of what that means. Do you know what I mean? When there is a language I hear that reflects the nuance of the way I believe in it, then I'll use it.
Okay.
And the reason why I couldn't, now in retrospect, I know the reason why I couldn't put my hand in there.
Okay, what is it?
It felt so disrespectful.
Oh, interesting.
The thing that was just repelling me, there was so much grief there, especially like literally at the time where we're hearing about the detention centers of children, and it just made me so sad. And we're on this like amusement park tour, you know, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I didn't do it. You didn't do it.
This is part of the reason why I don't like saying what it is that I believe, because it's so fluid. It changes. I realize it later. I have feelings first and then the thoughts form. So I like leaving room.
So that's our show. We hope you enjoyed it.
That was so fun, Taz.
Yeah, this was a very work intensive episode for both of us. We hope you enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun putting things together.
It was fun hearing our friends again.
Yeah.
Hi, Sabiha. Hi, Zahrabi.
Yeah. And we have this recording of our adventure through the streets of New Orleans. And it was good to hear your friends, too, Hoda, and her family stories.
Thank you, Taz.
Thank you, Zara. And thank you to all of our friends that were on our show.
Thanks for joining us.
We'd like to give a special shout out and shukran to our dear friends who let us interview them for this episode. Thank you to Zara Bilu, who you can follow on Twitter at Zara Bilu. Thank you to Sabiha Basrai, who you can follow on Twitter at Sabiha Basrai. Thank you to Zara's diaspora cousin, Hoda. In this episode, we also used songs from the Bubblegum's album, Brown Morticia, which you can download at Bandcamp. Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TazzyStar, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's Zahra Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarah-Smith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim Bad Muslim is recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located at Visual Communications. Visual Communications develops and supports the voices of Asian American and Pacific Islander media artists who empower communities and challenge perspectives. Some of their annual programs include the Academy Award qualifying Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, the Armed with the Camera Fellowship, and C3, the Conference for Creative Content. Learn more at vconline.org. Good Muslim Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy
Potluck.
Potluck.
Djinns are made of fire.
I want to be made of fire.